Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll begin a two-part conversation about only doing what only you can do. Andy, this topic is one that has not only shaped your leadership, it's really shaped our organization.
Yeah, the whole idea of only do what only you can do is something that ultimately every leader has to move towards. So we talk about it a lot around here. And before we jump into the heart of this content, there's one thing I want to make clear for our podcast listeners. This is not a decision that you make as much as it is a target that you shoot for. In other words, this isn't something at the end of our discussion somebody can say, well, I'm going to go do that now. You don't go to the offices this afternoon and say, well, from now on, I'm only going to do what only I can do. It really is something we move toward. And I really do think it's the bullseye on the target. Practically speaking, I'm not sure very many people, because of what we do and the nature of what, you know, some of our listeners do, that we actually get there. But I'm absolutely convinced it's something we should all shoot for. But the sooner that you get there, or the sooner that you get as close as you can get to getting there, the sooner you maximize your leadership.
Well, when I've heard you teach on this, you've talked about what you call the two best kept secrets of leadership. Talk about those.
Yeah, perhaps the two best kept secrets of leadership are, number one, the less you do, the more you accomplish. The less you do, the more you accomplish. That is, the fewer things you do, actually, the more you accomplish, which is certainly not intuitive. And the second one is, the less you do, the more you enable others to accomplish, which is a little more intuitive. The fewer things I do, the more opportunity there is for other people to do the things that I've chosen not to do. And as we're going to see, oftentimes, they're able to do those things better than I would be able to do them anyway. So the less you do, the more you accomplish. The less you do, the more you enable others to accomplish.
I've also heard you say that while this came to you a little bit later on, you wished you had learned this early in your leadership.
Whenever people ask me, hey, Andy, what's your greatest regret as a leader? The answer is always the same. I wish I had learned this earlier. And then even after I learned this, it still took me a long time, as we're going to talk about, to really embrace this idea. And for too many years, I just did everything. And early on in the beginning of an organization, startup, or even in a new job, oftentimes we have to do everything. Number one, we're the only person there to do it. And secondly, we're setting the pace. We're setting the standard. You know, we're defining through our actions, this is how we do it here. This is what excellence looks like here.
Right.
So it's natural and necessary to do everything early on. But at some point, in fact, earlier than I think most of us understand or realize, we have to begin handing things off and focusing on those few things that we do well. So it's in that transition. I feel like it took me too long to transition. It took me too long to focus on my strengths and to begin to delegate my weaknesses. And it's so interesting, Lane, because when I look back, I can remember, I didn't understand it then, but when I look back, I realized there were people trying to take things away from me that I did not do well, that they knew they could do better, but I was the boss, and so you have to be gentle and you have to be diplomatic. But now when I think back over some of those conversations, I realize they recognized that the organization would be better if I would stop doing some things. So perhaps all of us are still in a little bit of a tug of war with the people around us. So the sooner we embrace this and are intentional about this, I think the easier it is for us to open our hands and give away the things that we probably shouldn't be doing anyway.
Andy, along with two of the best kept secrets, you've also talked about two myths of leadership.
Yeah, the two myths are that great leaders are great at everything, or good leaders are good at everything, and that good leaders focus on their weaknesses in order to make them strengths. I mean, that seems intuitive. If I have a weakness, I should work on my weakness. But those are two myths. And I think early on in leadership, when I would meet people who I considered great leaders, I just, you know, you're in awe, you're enamored, and you read what they write, you look at what they accomplish, and it does, from the outside, look like they're just great at everything. They talk well, they look good, they're surrounded by great people, they're just magic, you know, they're rainmakers. And so, again, from the outside looking in, it's easy to assume, wow, they're just great at everything, but they're not. The reason they have accomplished what they've accomplished is because at some point along the way, they've learned the lesson that we're talking about today. And because you rarely see a weakness in a great leader, especially from the outside, we assume if they have weaknesses, they have pretty much erased them or marginalized them by working on them. But again, you get behind the scenes, you know, you scratch beneath the surface and you realize, no, they haven't made their weaknesses strengths. They've just made their strengths stronger. And again, it goes back to creating space for other people who have the strengths they don't have to make their organization stronger. So again, and I think the younger we are, the more important it is for us to recognize that you never make a weakness a strength. You make a strength stronger. And great leaders aren't great at everything. They've learned to, you know, focus their attention on the things that add the greatest value either to what they're doing or to their organization. And again, I was probably 8 years into my career before I realized that my real value to our organization lay within the context of my giftedness, not the number of hours that I worked. Mm. And again, I talked to lots of leaders who are burned out. And I always ask them, I say, okay, when you think about 100% of what you do, what percent of that 100% really makes a difference in your organization? What percent of that 100%, you know, if you were to go back and really focus on what really made a difference, what percent? And you know what? I once, you know, we push and push and pull, it's generally between 20 and 50%. I mean, wow. Most leaders will admit probably half of what I did really didn't make any difference. And in some cases, much of what I did got in the way of my success looking back. And again, looking back, it's clear. But in the moment, it's not. But moving forward, if we can recognize and just accept the fact, there are really just a few things that make a big difference. If I focus my time and my energy on those few things, then I will probably be just as successful as I would be if I spent more time doing more things.
Andy, does this behavior sometimes come from a place of proving yourself as a leader?
Yeah, especially when we're young. I mean, I think we all struggle. I mean, I continue to struggle with, do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes? And the younger we are, when we have no track record, or perhaps a bad track record, we really wonder, do I have what it takes? So when I get an opportunity, and if, you know, a person's even, you know, marginally ambitious, you know, we jump in and again, try to do everything. So again, as I said earlier, it's natural and sometimes it is necessary to do a little bit of everything or to actually do everything. But at some point, we have to step back, embrace this idea that I'm only really great, I'm only really good at a few things, and there are really just a few things that add a lot of value to my organization or to my department. And the sooner I can edit or tweak my job description, or in some cases, just my schedule, so that I'm spending more time on the things that make the biggest difference. You know, things are just better. They're better for me because I'm, you know, working in my sweet spot. At the same time, they're better for the organization because, as I said earlier, I've created space for other talented people to do what they do well.
So that brings us back then to only do what only you can do.
Yeah, you know, one context where this is extremely clear, and you know, sports franchises, they have so many advantages over those of us in corporate world. We've talked about, you know, some of that before. But, you know, if you think about your favorite MLB pitcher, you know, what's their batting average? You know, what's the batting average of your favorite pitcher? You have no idea, and you don't care.
It's not good.
Yeah, it's not good, and you don't care. Right. Why? That's not why they're there. They have a very, very specific job, and there are other people who can hit the ball, you know. And there's some crossover in terms of what we do corporately. There's some things that, you know, where, in fact, we even use that terminology. Wow, you really knocked it out of the park. Mm. Well, chances are I'm only going to really knock it out of the park in the two or three areas. And the more time I can spend, you know, up to bat in the context where I can knock it out of the park, the organization, you know, the organization prospers. But that's true for every single person in an organization, which brings us back to what I model as a leader as it relates to this principle, as it trickles down through the organization. If more and more people begin to ask the question, how can I spend more time on the things that add the most value, the organization's going to be better and stronger. And at the end of these two podcasts, we're going to come back and give some specific questions about how leaders can help the folks around them begin to think that way. And you know, Lane, if you think about it, the moment a leader steps away from their core competencies, their effectiveness as a leader diminishes. The moment I step out of the arenas where I add the most value and I spend any amount of my time in areas where I'm really not making the greatest contribution, it doesn't just impact me and my schedule. It really impacts the entire organization, especially, as I've done too many times, especially if I begin to interfere with people who are working in an area of core competency, but they've got to be gentle and nice and polite and listen to all my bad ideas because I'm the boss. So this really is a big idea in terms of the leader as an individual, but it really has extraordinary implications as it relates to an entire organization.
Andy, obviously this makes total sense.
I hope so.
But it doesn't seem to be intuitive to most leaders. Why do most leaders miss this?
Well, I can tell you why I missed it for years, and perhaps there's some overlap. I think some of us, as I said earlier, buy into the myth of being a well-rounded leader. As a well-rounded leader, that means I need to be well-rounded. I need to be able to do a little bit of everything and, again, shore up my weaknesses instead of focusing on my strengths. But the truth is, and again, we know this from multiple disciplines, great achievers are not well-rounded. I mean, just pick your favorite hero in whatever, whatever profession, whatever arena of life. Again, they've accomplished great things, but when you read their biographies later or, you know, when articles come out about them, there's always a downside. The people who accomplish the most are generally not, quote, well-rounded. They're men and women who have learned to play to their strengths and delegate their weaknesses. And then I think another reason that we don't embrace this or, again, we push back is that leaders oftentimes forget to distinguish between their authority and their core competencies. And this is a really big deal, to distinguish between our authority and our core competencies. As the leader of this organization, I have authority over every element of this organization, but I am not competent in every single element of this organization. Right. There are rooms that when I walk in, people get nervous because they hope I'm not going to start, giving instructions. And there are times I walk in, I say, I'm just here to watch. But, I'm not here to be the boss. I'm just here to watch. I have authority, but I have no competency. Failing to distinguish between those two things is a really, really big deal. And again, the insecure leader will feel compelled to pretend to know more about things than they really do. And the good leaders around, the insecure leaders, sniff that out immediately. They know when we're pretending. It's much better to congratulate the people who work with us on how smart they are, how efficient they are. I'm constantly saying, I could not do your job. I could not do your job. I have the authority. But in this arena, I have no competency. So learning to distinguish between authority and our competencies is a really big deal. And leaders who fail to make that distinction, they're going to drift away from their strengths toward things that they really shouldn't be involved in. And Lane, as you know, when we exert our authority in an area where we lack competency, we have the potential to derail a project, to demotivate the people around us, especially the people we've hired to do those specific things. So this is a really big deal. In fact, as we've talked about before on our podcast, great leaders often say, I'll let you make that decision. You make that decision. You make the decision. And whenever I say you make that decision, what I'm saying is, I believe you are better at making that decision than I am in your division or your department. Again, I'm the authority. I could walk in there and ask you to do whatever I think you ought to do, but you decide. So again, the leaders who miss this oftentimes are leaders who fail to distinguish between authority and core competencies.
Well, Andy, doesn't this assume that a leader can distinguish between what they're good at and what they're not?
Yes, and it's a real big problem when a leader cannot do that. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to fake it and to pretend and to step into, a department or division and, act like I know what's going on. But for the leader who is actually convinced that they know more than the people in those particular arenas, that's a real problem. And that's often a self-awareness problem. And that's almost impossible for anyone in a company to address. It's almost impossible to approach someone who's in authority and say, hey, we need to talk about your lack of self-awareness. And of course, insecure leaders have a tendency to hide their weaknesses, assuming they ever discover them to begin with. And as I often say to leaders, if you don't know what you're not good at, just ask the people who work with you. They know. In fact, when you get up and say to your team or your leadership team, there are two or three things that I'm really not good at, no one's going to pull out their pen and write them down. They already know.
Right.
But that self-awareness is what allows a leader to stay out of things they need to stay out of and not feel as if they're giving something up by not getting involved.
Andy, I remember you talking about how difficult it was for you to delegate a weakness, not because you wanted to keep it, but because you didn't think anyone else would want it.
Yeah, I think this is the number one reason I held on to things too long as a leader. At least that's what I tell myself. Humor me. Because there was something in me that I thought, well, if I don't want to do this, I don't want to ask someone else to do
right.
it. You know, I equated all that sort of thing to taking out the trash at home. It's like, I don't want to take out the trash, so I should take out the trash. Why? Because nobody wants to take out
yeah.
the trash. Well, what's true of taking out the trash at home is not true of everything that happens in an organization. So again, going back to what I said earlier, I think I was reluctant to hand things off, even when people around me were saying, Andy, let me do that. Let us take care of that. You don't need to worry about that. You don't need to go to this meeting. And that was their way of saying, the meeting goes better when you're not there. And there are a lot of those meetings. So, you know, for me, and I don't know if this is true for, you know, many of the men and women who are listening to our podcast, but for me, I was reluctant to hand things off because, again, I thought, no, I need to set the example. I need to be willing to do, I need to be willing to take out the trash. But again, as we all know, you know, what's taking out the trash to me is a golden opportunity for somebody else.
Right.
Just like there are people who, you know, sometimes when I say to my administrative assistant, you know, Diane, I don't know how to say this, but I would hate your job. And she laughs. She says, well, I would hate yours. I'm like, well, it's perfect. So again, you know, one man's trash is another man's opportunity. So I that really held me back in the early years. So the bottom line is your weakness is somebody else's opportunity. And that's something we can't lose sight of as leaders.
Well, Andy, I think that's a great place to end for now. Next month on the podcast, we'll conclude this conversation as well as look at the impact of only doing what only you can do. For now, though, any final thoughts?
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is by a professor I had in graduate school, Dr. Howard Hendricks, and this is what he said. He said, if anything has kept me on track all these years, it's being skewered to the principle of central focus. And then he says this. This is the nut. He says, there are many things I can do, but I have to narrow it down to the one thing I must do. The secret of concentration is elimination. The secret of concentration is elimination. Again, the less you do, the more you accomplish.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for today. And to all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us. Don't forget to check out the andystanley.com website where you can find the Leadership Podcast application guide to go with today's podcast.